Spring into action with the biggest fly fishing gear sale of the season. Jackson Hole Fly Company is thrilled to announce their spectacular 25% off anniversary sale. They are inviting all of us to celebrate with them. Whether you're a seasoned angler or just starting out, there's never been a better time to upgrade your equipment and save big. Are you looking for a rugged, waterproof sling pack or backpack to keep your gear dry throughout all the adventures this year? They have you covered. Are you in search of a new carbon fiber landing net? Top quality fly boxes, essential gear like fly lines and leaders? They have all that and more. This is your chance to grab some incredible deals and make the fishing season unforgettable. Don't wait. Dive into the savings today. Head over to jacksonholeflycompany.com and take advantage of this limited time sale. I agree. I think that's probably the biggest tip is you like the niches, right? You ever heard the saying, the riches are in the niches?
I have not, but
that's a good,
I'm still looking for the riches, but we're super happy to be in 400 stores and we're super happy that we're kind of catching on out west. And we even do a backpack soft cooler too. We brought that back for you. Fly fishing guys kept knocking on our door saying, please make it again. So
that was Jason Costello sharing one big success through his business, Canyon Coolers. The most important piece of camping gear today on the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show.
Welcome to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show, where you discover tips, tricks, and tools from the leading names in fly fishing today.
Hey, how's it going today? Thanks for stopping by the Fly Fishing Show. We are doing a big refresh on the Wet Fly Swing Member Society right now. This is where you can connect directly with other listeners of this show, including myself, without distractions from that annoying social web. We've got a nice little community in there we're building and would love to connect with you. You can find out how to actually be a guest on this podcast by checking out the link at wetflyswing.com/yourpodcast. You can get more information there. There's a chance if you're interested in that, that's a special feature we offer in there. Tons of new stuff coming each day and interactions, so would love it if you can stop by the member society and say hi. If you're already in there, I want to thank you in advance for being a member and commenting. If you can, hop over there right now and leave a comment or just connect with the community. I appreciate that. Jason Costello, founder of Canyon Coolers, shares a story of how he created one of the best rotomolded coolers in the world with a focus on the outdoor boating niche. We find out how they are different from Yeti, why they created this recessed latch and some of their other features, including their handle system, which is actually pretty handy for if you have a boat, and how to keep your kids from leaving the cooler open. They even have that covered today. So we dig into a little bit of everything and hear the story from Jason. I have this this weird fascination with camping gear. Who's with me out there? Do you feel that? Without further ado, here is Jason Costello from CanyonCoolers.com. We've got Jason Costello from Canyon Coolers on. How's it going, Jason?
It's going great. We got like 6 inches of snow, so it's a great day to be in the ice chest business.
Nice. Yeah, and you're in Arizona, right?
I am, but we're up at 7,000 feet, so we're on something called the Colorado Plateau, and we do tend to get a little snow up here.
Oh, yeah.
It's a little hidden part of Arizona, but I'll take it. I've been up here for almost 30 years, so I tell people.
Oh, wow.
Almost local. Yeah.
That's sweet. Yeah. Arizona seems like the place. I mean, you get the heat, but then you also get the some of the what you have there. You know, it's pretty awesome, right? I mean, what's your favorite thing about living in Arizona?
Well, I tell you what, if I get tired of the weather in Flagstaff, I can just drive any direction for an hour. It's a completely different climate.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, then you're down in the high desert, and then life's a little bit different. Sometimes that's good, and sometimes it's hot, but I'll take it.
That's right. Well, let's jump into, I'm sure Arizona is going to come up as we talk about Canyon Coolers. You know, you've got probably one of the best coolers on the market right now. And I think I want to dig in and hear the story, how that all came to be. So maybe just start us off, talk about how you found yourself in the, you know, in the cooler business.
Gosh, I was the accidental entrepreneur. I had helped finance production for a little cooler company. They were called Galaxy Coolers at the time. And I found out that they weren't really functioning too well, and I ended up sort of taking it over. I found myself with 700 coolers, and I had to do something with them. So I built a website, and I kind of liked I love the product, but I kind of liked the business. And it started as a hobby, and it had a great fit in Flagstaff because they used to build these things here by hand back in the 80s with fiberglass. And we still have that mold is still circulating around town. But they used to call it a coffin cooler, and they'd use it for Grand Canyon rafting.
Nice. Yeah, that's in the other part of the – we've had a few episodes where we've had some Grand Canyon boaters, and we had Martin Linton, you know, he's one of the dory guys down there, right, the old school. So it's cool. And when I think of the Grand Canyon, obviously the heat – is one thing you guys get out there. So having a good cooler that can last for a long trip is important. So I wanted to go back to the 700 coolers. So those first, when you jumped into this Galaxy company, were those coolers the actual similar type to what you guys have now? Kind of the, what do they call them? The roto mold?
They were rotationally molded. And so, yeah, I would call those Gen 1, and we really don't have any of those anymore, but they were being manufactured primarily in Thailand for the Australian market. So I brought them in here, and then I started fixing them up myself and using different seals and latches. And I tried going to different factories here in the U.S. and they'd kind of laugh and send me out the door because I was just, you know, the little guy that they didn't have time for. And so we just kind of kept to it and stayed stubborn and, started sort of doing things our way, and that turned into us doing our own tooling and coming up with our own designs. And now we have, we're still a small company, but we're manufacturing stuff in California and Arizona, still in Thailand. And, you know, we have a pretty complex little supply chain going these days.
And on the cooler, so what year was that when you first got this going?
It was about 11 years ago at this point. We've been a lawful business here about 10. So, okay. I was operating out of garage in this classic garage business.
That's right. That's awesome. I love that. And now, I mean, the cool thing about the candy cooler thing, and I didn't know actually the full background, but in doing a little bit of research, you know, it feels like to me some of the features you guys have put in and the cooler itself and how long it, you know, does on keeping ice, that you're one of the best companies out there. And there's obviously a bunch of names out there. I mean, Yeti is one name that always comes up, and it's a big brand, you know, in the fly fishing space. But there's a whole bunch of other coolers out there, right? But it appears to me like you have one of the best. Can you talk about how you took it from this Galaxy cooler and now have a great cooler? Yeah, now it's Canyon.
Well, yeah, absolutely. A lot of my competitors are sort of buying generic stuff from, you know, a company that's a country that starts with C over there in Southeast Asia. And that is what it is. And we accept that. When I started this, we had like 5 competitors. I think I probably have 90 now.
Oh, wow.
But we've managed to outlast our competition time again. And I think some of it is stubbornness. And I think we've also just done a good job of finding our own way. Like we really do produce our own designs, and you don't see that a lot in the industry. And I think that really helped us. And when we found our niche early, I'm a whitewater guy through and through to the bone. And so I wanted the perfect whitewater cooler. So we started designing stuff that would ride on your frame rails and tie down easy. And you could have a drain plug that you could get access to. It wouldn't be hidden by a tube. And, you know, we really kind of, you know, no matter what we were trying to design or do, we really brought in outside people. I mean, adventurous people that lived that life, and these people just happened to work for me. So it worked out great. You know, we stuck to our passion, and we didn't have $250,000 product development fee funds or anything like that. But we paid attention to people that were really out there, you know, having fantastic outdoor adventures and trying to really appeal to what they needed and what they wanted.
It's inspiring to hear, because, you know, it just shows you that, you don't need a $250,000 budget to make a great product. And,
you know, and have a successful company. It sounds like, so you've niched down. I mean, your niche is that rafting, or at least it started out as the rafting company. And some of the features, so you mentioned a couple of them there as far as the tie down, that's great. The recessed, like the locking, the latches, right? What else would you throw out there as far as some of your main features on the cooler?
Well, I think our warranty would be another thing. Mm-hmm. It's a no fault warranty. Anything short of neglect or theft, we basically will fix the cooler if it looks vaguely like ours and something bad happens to it. You flip your ATV over and find a way to crack the lid. We'll replace the cooler or replace the lid. So we really kind of believe in being treated the way we want to be treated.
And, nice.
We don't require people to register the cooler necessarily or anything like that. Yep. It's just, try to be the people you want to be. Hopefully people will respond to that. So we follow that along. We really believe in recessed clean designs. Out west here, it's the back of a truck that we live out of. So we wanted stuff that was streamlined and didn't catch fly line.
But okay. So basically, yeah, the warranty is a huge part of it. I mean, when you think of the other companies out there, like you said, I mean, just the quality, the obviously keeping ice, from melting for a long time is the big feature of all these coolers. But can you describe for somebody that doesn't know what this Rotomold or what this is exactly? Because it seems like, you used to have all and you still have them, the normal coolers, right? The old coolers. And now you have these coolers. Why do they insulate ice so well? And how are they compared to the old style?
Oh, gotcha. So your old style coolers, the stuff we all grew up with, that's typically blow molded. And it may have seams in it. It may just have air in it. Sometimes there's some insulation in there. But rotationally molded products are a little different. It's a less precise way to make anything, but you get seamless walls. So there's nothing that's been glued together. There's nothing that's been welded together. The double wall is just kind of how you can do something rotationally molded. And while it requires a lot of handwork and hand finishing, and they're a little bit crude in terms of fit and finish sometimes, you get this really strong structure, and it's capable of holding really violent foam inside it. So the insulation we're using is a lot like, say, those spray can foams that you might get from the hardware store, that expanding foam.
Oh, yeah.
So we just use something, really dense, violent version of that. And we have to put the cooler into a special jig, or as strong as it is, it would still try to turn it into a meatball. But what you get is, you just get this really strong product, and you can literally park a car on top of these things and they'll stand up to it.
Wow. So they're super. So not only are they insulated, but yeah, they're super durable. I haven't seen the video, but I heard, was there a video out there of you like driving over one of your coolers or something like that?
Oh, gosh, yeah, we did a bunch of that stuff in the early days, and we used to do it over the Jeep Easter safaris over in Moab, those kinds of events. It was always a lot of fun, and I think people have seen that enough. We don't do it as much as we used to anyway, but it is a lot of fun.
That's cool. Okay, so, and just for the Roto, how do you spell that? If we were to look up more on the background of what that is.
Go rotational molding would be the way to go. Yeah, what you have is this gimbal. So the molds themselves aren't particularly expensive, but you pour your powder into this mold, and it basically spins around left to right and up and down. And it's spinning around inside of an oven, and then there's a whole cooling function as well.
I see.
It's sort of crude, but it's nothing can really beat it as far as strength goes.
Strength and the insulation. So, and the insulation, you guys, so, and you add that after that process is complete, or is that during that process when you add the insulation?
Sort of after the process. You'll pull it out of that mold, maybe let it finish cooling and setting, and there's some different contractions and shrinkage you deal with. And then we put it into a separate foaming jig, which is a lot like a mold. We'll foam. And typically that foam is going in through the bottom of your foot of the cooler, and then cover that hole with a little rubber foot, or you might see a plastic button on the back of like your head of your canyon. And that'll be the foaming hole.
Okay. All right. Perfect. So yeah, that clarifies a little bit on what it's about. And, you know, I think we'll dig into a few more of the features as we go here. But I just want to talk, you know, maybe about somebody who's out there. Say they have the old cooler. They got an old, you know, Igloo or whatever, Coleman or something. And they want to get into this market and grab one of these coolers. You know, as far as, like, choosing a cooler, what do you tell somebody if they're coming in, they know nothing about this? How do they know what, you know, talk about, like, sizes or features or anything to be thinking about?
Well, the most popular sizes are those medium-sized coolers. So the 55 quart, our Outfitter 55, is probably our top seller. And that's a couple people going camping for the weekend. But if you're, you know, if you're living out of a Jeep or a Subaru or maybe something where you don't have unlimited amounts of space, you might look at something like a 35 quart cooler as well. So sometimes we want to look at the spaces that you have, how long you want to go out. Do you need 150 beers to get through your week, or, you know, is 30 reasonable?
That's right. Let's talk about that in the 12 ounce the 12 ounce can variety. So the 55 quart. So how tell me the difference? How many beers? Typically, because you got to add ice too. And I always think about that's always the challenge because with the ice, you know, some of the older coolers that I have. You know, they're nice because you can actually get full blocks, you know, those blocks of ice, which are nice to use. But I mean, how do you recommend, like, talk about the ice thing and how, well, first of all, let's go back to the beer. How many beers can you get in the 55 with ice, or how does that work?
Well, I'll tell you a little trick to use. Find the true capacity of the cooler you're looking at. And if it's 55 quarts, yeah, you could get 55 beers in and a little bit of ice because you figure each can of beer is not a quart, right? It's maybe two thirds of a quart. So I think when I think of look at a 50 quart cooler, I could keep 40 beers cold for a really long time or 55 beers cold for, you know, maybe a long weekend.
Gotcha.
But that's one little thing that can be helpful. Some people don't actually advertise the true capacity of their coolers, so sometimes you have to dig for that information, or it's misleading.
Yeah, yeah.
I do like block ice, and I look for that stuff that's kind of clear myself. And there's definitely different qualities of ice out there. Like your hotel room ice maker is just it's half melted before you get it in the bucket.
Mm-hmm.
So you will see some differences, but I do like a little block ice in the bottom. And if I'm putting more than two blocks in or more than one, I'll take the bag off and they'll kind of melt and fuse together.
Oh, nice.
One bigger block. Then I'll load everything and then you can fill in the cracks with some ice cubes. And if you want to go with dry ice, you can. I made the mistake of putting dry ice on top of my lettuce once and it carbonated my lettuce. Which might not be to everyone's taste.
Let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsors. OPST's rods represent decades of dedication to sustained anchor two-handed casting. The Pure Skagit series falls right in line with OPST's principles, a short, medium, fast-action rod that sports an extra sensitive tip, all while maintaining a powerful lower section that's true and sure to leave you impressed by its feather launching potential. And I've been using this rod for steelhead lately and been blown away by its lightweight and the power it packs. You almost don't realize it's in your hand. It's seriously, it's like it's ultra light. So that was, you know, thinking about how to describe this thing. I think that's the word that comes back to me. I was casting some big flies for steelhead with a sink tip and a bunch of wind, and I didn't have a problem at all, even with my less than perfect casting technique. So I've been impressed with the 11-foot 7-weight, but there is a huge line. They have three different rods in the lineup, from 6 to 9 weights, and from 10-foot 8-inch all the way up to 12-foot 3-inch, which pretty much, for me, covers it all. So I'm excited to dig into more of this. Targeted towards fishing large trout and up to Canadian and Alaskan king salmon, this series should cover all the bases when targeting those larger fish. Head over to wetflyswing.com/OPST to check out the lineup right now. That's wetflyswing.com/OPST. Okay, now back to the show.
And on your 55 quart, can you actually put blocks? I mean, I guess I might think there's probably different size blocks, but I think of the standard blocks I usually get. you know, will they fit down in the bottom like lengthwise, or do you have to kind of, you know what I mean, like size wise? I guess the 55 is pretty big, right?
55 is a decent size. You know, like a 75 quart one might be like a small deer box. I've seen some 55s and 35s in drift boats.
Okay.
And then, you know, when you get into like your 14 foot rafts, we usually tell people to get our prospectors like 103 quarts.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
And if you have a bigger raft yet, we have this something called the Navigator, and that's for big boy rafting. You're going out for long periods of time.
giant stuff. Okay. So you got all the different sizes. We can look on the website for that. So, but basically for packing it, you recommend, you pack it with the blocks on the bottom and then put your stuff in and then throw on crushed on top of that and then seal it up and you're good to go.
That's it. Yeah. And block ice can change from here to there. In Arizona, and I don't know if this would be true with like your Colorado fans, but the better block ice seems to almost be a little smaller. It's very clear to look through.
Okay.
Sometimes they take cube ice that hasn't sold and they press it into a block. And those are really cloudy, and that's air that's trapped in there. And they're just not going to be as good, but they tend to be a little bigger looking. So,
gotcha.
It's good to know what you're looking at, because they're not going to tell you. So it's just something we've learned over time.
Yeah, that's a good tip too. Okay. So that gets us going there. So basically, yeah, you have to figure out how big of a space obviously you have in your boat or whatever you're using, and then just fill it with whatever size cooler you can get. I mean, the bigger it seems like the bigger the better, right? I mean, why would you go smaller? I mean, it seems like I right now currently have a drift boat that I'm using, but I'm looking at getting a raft, and I'm kind of trying to think, okay, what do I need to get this geared up? And I mean, do you guys still, as far as your niche, are you still a large percentage people that are in the boating, or are you kind of doing everything now?
Well, we initially pivoted from whitewater into hunting pretty quickly, and the technology was still kind of new and fancy, especially back in like 2016. And we did a lot in the bow hunting world. But I would say we definitely probably have the largest market. You know, whitewater rafting out west is a huge market, but we probably have a bigger share of that than just about anybody. And it's been good to us, and we'll always stay focused on our roots. But, you know, it's with different seasons, we tend to look at a slightly different customer. You know, in the summer, you've got everybody, but in the shoulder seasons, you really get these sort of seasoned pros that are obsessed with whatever their passion is, whether it be hunting or whitewater rafting. Those guys are looking for coolers in the spring or the fall. And that keeps us going year round, which is good.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That makes total sense. Obviously we have a ton of hunters as well, and bow hunting and fly fishing especially go hand in hand. So it's, I'm sure there are plenty of people that are aware of you guys. So what, anything else to be thinking about? I know some of the features, one thing we didn't talk about, the handles, that's a really cool one, how you guys have your kind of recessed handle. So you have a rope handle and an actual handle on the cooler. Is that a pretty popular feature?
Yes, and I think it goes back to our boating roots, but the rope handles come in to be pretty nice when you're trying to get a cooler in and out of a boat, where you have different dock heights and things like that. You know, sometimes our stiff handle feels good, and I don't mean to knock that, but that rope handle just comes in handy for lowering things or raising things up and, giving you a little wiggle room, so to speak. And we believe in the tie downs and we also have like tiered baskets in some of our coolers.
Oh yeah.
So we try to take a look at it and come up with a nice little twist and really kind of make it ours. There's a million Yeti copies out there, and I'm too dumb or too stubborn to just go down that road. I've got to reinvent my thing.
That's right.
And we're getting a really nice response from the community, and we've been really fortunate.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, no, it's awesome. I think I'm excited to hopefully dig into a little more into it and share. Well, obviously we're going to be sharing it to people on that are listening right now that haven't heard of you. And it looks different. You know, I think the Yeti, it looks, you know, obviously you've got your own style. There's no question, you know, it's your own thing. So it's pretty cool to hear a little bit of the background. It's also bear approved, right? Is that a pretty common thing in these coolers?
Yes, we do have bear approval across most of our coolers, and it's something we started doing early on, and it's interesting to go through the bear testing process. It's like, what's the bear into? Well, the bear likes to eat your latches first and foremost. And it's chewing gum for that guy. And then he likes to eat the drain plug because it might be some salmon blood or something in the inside of that cooler that's drawing him to it during your testing process. And they'll bat it around. And one tip for everybody out there is you do have to have a lock on the cooler for it to actually function as a bear-proof cooler. Mm. So keep that in mind. It's an interesting process, and it leads us to streamlining things, and it's why you might not see deep handles in the lids to pull things up, because the bear wants to get in there with his claws and scalp the top of your cooler.
Hmm. Yeah.
So we always have to stay one step ahead, and I have to say, these grizzlies that they test with, that's all they do is break into things, so they're probably a little more adept than your typical average wild bear.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, they could probably almost just open the latch with their paw, right?
I mean, you know, like I said, they like to eat them anyway. But
I mean, we've kind of touched on a few of the things. Anything else we wanted to touch on here just before we move on to the next little section? I mean, did we cover the basics? It sounds like, I mean, obviously the time. Maybe we just touch on that really quick as far as time that the ice is going to last. Right? I know you have some stuff out there that talks about these Grand Canyon trips where, you know, it lasts for like 2-3 weeks and stuff like that. But what does somebody typically, if they're going to be getting in and out of the cooler, what do you tell them when they ask a question like, how long does the ice last?
Yeah, that's a tricky question. And, you know, you can probably do a lot of things wrong and get 5 days out of a medium-sized cooler. But you probably can't open it every 5 minutes, though. So, you know, if the ice retention is important to you, if you do have a longer trip, there's some ways you can go about it. You could put drinks in one cooler and food in another, and that might be a good way to do it. But, some of our coolers will go up like 27 days, but we don't promise that. Those are pros that might get into the cooler, you know, only once in a while, you know, maybe first thing in the morning while it's still cool out, they'll get out what they need for the day and put it into a lesser cooler. It's a little bit tricky to answer that question for folks, but can get a week out of a medium sized cooler that's prepped well and managed well. You know, and if you're going to put warm beer in there or a warm drink, that is kind of a no-no. Like a warm six-pack could melt almost 10 pounds of ice.
Oh, wow.
So, as neat as these coolers are, they can't defy physics. So we do have to educate folks as well as to best practices. And we try to do that, you know, we're patient about that.
And that is a good reminder. So where would somebody go to get some of those best practices as far as the, you know, knowing about, like, you can pre-cooler, right, your stuff and your cooler. Do you have a place where, like, a resource that somebody could read right now or?
Funny you should ask, Dave. We actually have something called the Ice Academy. If you poke around our website at canyoncoolers.com or look for our YouTube channel, you'll find plenty of information there. We also put tips in with the coolers when people buy them so that they have a sheet to look at. And people are always welcome to reach out via Facebook or Instagram or something like that. We like to talk coolers and ice retention, and you know, that's what we do.
Yeah, that's what you're good at. So, and what is the you know, as far as the pre-cooling? Can you just talk about that briefly? Like, what if somebody's, you know, going out? What do you recommend? Do they stick the cooler in a freezer and freeze it, or how do they pre-cool it?
Well, when we're doing a Grand Canyon run, that's 272 miles, so that would be your most extreme event, right? And maybe you want to serve steak on day 16, right? So that does require some planning and some forethought and having like a, you know, if you're working with a butcher or something like that for a longer term event, they'll often let you put the cooler in their freezer. You could maybe freeze a couple inches of water in the bottom, and that's probably the best, you know, you can go for. But for more reasonable purposes, try to pre-cool it a little bit. If your garage is 100 degrees because it's June, you know, realize that insulation is 100 degrees also. So just try to get some ice in there the day before, even if it's just sacrificial. Cool down that cooler. We'll bring it in the house where it's 70 degrees instead of 94. And think in terms of that and having everything as cold as possible before you put it in, and good quality ice. You'll probably do just fine. And do recognize every time you open the lid, you're going to change out the air inside the cooler. So it's okay to fill the cooler all the way to the top. A full cooler will probably keep ice longer than a half empty cooler.
Right. So fill it up. And in the Ice Academy, do you guys talk about dry ice at all? I know I've tried that a little bit and it's been kind of like some good and bad. Is that something that can be good to do?
You know what? I don't have probably a ton of expert information in there, but I will offer this out there. Dry ice will expand 2,300 times. So if you're using it, just be aware. You know, if you're in a closed vehicle and you start to have a headache, you might want to roll down the window or something along those lines, because dry ice is pretty serious stuff.
Yeah.
We've never had a really bad event or anything that we're aware of.
Are those Grand Canyon, those 3-week trips, are they using dry ice?
No, actually, they're not. Primarily, they're not needing them. So it's... Yeah.
There you go.
But they might get into one cooler for 1 week, and then, you know, one specific cooler might be just for week 3 or week 2 down there. There's a few different ways you could do it. Or you could have one cooler that's produce, another one that's meat, and another one that, you know, might be something else.
That's right. Cool. Yeah. No, and I never really liked, I've used it, but yeah, it always seemed like a hassle. It was like, you know, I think I'd rather just have a good cooler and just do like we're talking about here. And so the handles, I just want to touch on that. So I know your handles, not only are the latches are recessed and they're clip, you know, they're in, they're pretty easy to open. Are they, cause I know some of these handles, these scooters are these rubber and they're really hard to open. Are yours hard? Are they easy or moderate?
Oh yeah. We're not a knuckle buster kind of company. You know, the brand Y out there, you know, really requires you to kind of press your knuckles up against the side of the cooler. Our stuff is still pretty family friendly. So, and take that for what it's worth. That might mean your wife can get in and get a beer that you don't want her to, but
that's what I was going to say. The challenges is that I think of my kids because I've got, they're like 7 and 9. And, I'll tell you what, it's the biggest problem. It's a hot day and the kids go in there, they leave the cooler, you know, not only are they in and out, but they leave it open sometimes. It's like, wow, come on.
That's it.
Like 100 degrees and the cooler's open. So it almost seems like sometimes maybe the knuckle, you know, the harder to open is better for the kids, right?
It's a classic dad move. I've got an 11-year-old too. It's like, hey, you're letting all the cold out. Stop it. But for better or for worse, you can put a lock on the cooler, but everything that we have is a form of a cam, actually. So you're using leverage, and it's really pretty easy to open all of our coolers. It's easy to latch up.
That's awesome. And when you latch up, and that's the thing, because the seal, you have a silicone seal in there that kind of seals up. Is that, how do you get that seal from there? Because that's a big challenge. A lot of these, the kind of crappier coolers are just plastic, but you actually have a rubber thing in there.
Yeah. And the seal is important. Most folks our seal is a little different than what you're seeing in the marketplace. We use a really fat foam based seal that's extra thick, where most folks are using kind of a wiper blade in their premium cooler. And what we've found is this just provides better immediate contact and seal. The other styles, you kind of have to wait for the air to cool down inside the cooler, and then it'll suck the lid in. And ours is just much more immediate. A good seal is important. If you don't have a good seal, you know, you're not going to get more than 2 or 3 days out of that ice. So if there's ever a problem with a cooler, whether it's ours or somebody else's, we tend to look at the seal first.
Gotcha. And is that, like you said, if there's any problems, you guys have a lifetime warranty. So it's no problem getting a new seal if you have to or whatever.
Well, that's it. Yeah. If the dog eats your latch, like I don't want to be bad mouthed over a $5 latch. We'll just send you a latch. So we just ask folks to take a picture of it and then email us at warranty@caningcoolers.com. And we'll usually get parts out within a day or two.
And now let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsors. With more than 40 years of experience in coffee, the Angler's Coffee Team roasts a full range of coffees with one goal in mind, delivering excellent coffee to every single angler. That's why they've released a brand new coffee subscription program made just for you. Just visit anglerscoffee.com, provide your coffee preferences, your mailing address, and how much coffee you drink in a week, and they'll take care of the rest. There's no obligations or hidden fees, just great coffee delivered to your front door. As part of Angler's Conservation Alliance, Angler's Coffee donates a portion of every sale to help conserve and protect our wild natural habitats and fish species. Right now, they're raising money for Soul River, which brings veterans and inner city youth out into the river to teach conservation, fishing skills, and more. Right now, you can get 22% off your next order. Just use the coupon code WETFLYSWING at checkout. Just head over to that's wetflyswing.com/anglers and use the coupon code WETFLYSWING at checkout. Okay, now let's get back to the rest of the show.
So, I mean, again, going back to this, we've mentioned, you know, some of the other companies out there. But, I mean, for you, you know, you've created, we, I think, verify that this is a really great product. And we've had listeners that have noted that as well. But, you know, what has been some of the challenges for you getting through this? Obviously, there's some competition there. What do you think has been the biggest challenge to kind of get to where you want to get?
Well, you know, the truth is we're probably undercapitalized. We struggle, I think, with our supply chains at times, mm-hmm. and just having what people want when they need it, has been more of a challenge than ever over the last year or so.
All right.
But you know, beyond that, I think we have the best customers on earth and they've been patient and we do our best to take care of them, and the number of return customers we get has been fantastic. And it's really when 18% of your customers come back and buy a second or a third thing. It's flattering to us. It lets us know we're doing a good job. And we really kind of seek out that feedback and it keeps us on our toes. The challenge is that naivety with a business is like, hey, I did something. Somebody gave me a couple bucks. I'm going to grow this and we're going to have a huge company. And the reality is it takes a lot of money to grow. And it can't all just be funded by profits. So you really have to come at it with a little more sophisticated angle. And I'm not a sophisticated guy. So that's been my learning curve.
Yeah. Yeah, no, these are some of the same challenges. Probably a lot of companies that are getting into it that... Yeah, do you guys do a lot of, I mean, I guess on the advertising, do you find yourself having to do a lot of that, or do you do more, is it word of mouth, or how did you grow the thing initially? How did you kind of get the word going out there?
I think the word of mouth has been big for us. I think people are influenced by their friends that they trust when they say, hey, this is a good product, or this is a good podcast. Like you'll check it out, yep. Right? And so I think that's been super valuable to us. I've probably wasted money on every form of advertising. We did TV ads on hunting channels and things like that. But we've just been pretty lucky focusing on trying to get out there digitally and show people a little bit about who we are, what we are. And, when they scratch the surface and do their homework, we seem to come up as a viable option. And that's it. Yep. Take care of your customers and hopefully they take care of you, and we've been blessed so far.
That's it. Yeah, it seems like we get those questions. We have a number of, you know, businesses and small and medium brands that are listening, you know, and it's always kind of like, okay, what would be one tip you give them to help them, you know, kind of grow their business? You know, some of them are brand new, and I think that's it, just serving your customer. I mean, anything else you'd throw out there if you had one tip to give somebody that's maybe got a new company?
I think we tried to be everything for everybody. And that's just a recipe for failure. I'm not a deep sea ocean fishing cooler company.
Right.
I can't pretend to be. We're Mountain West outdoorsy kind of back of the truck guys. And that's always played well for us. So I think like knowing who you are is a good thing. And that's what you're not.
See, and that's what's amazing, because as you say that, you know, when you talk about the back of the pickup stuff, you know, all that. I mean, it's resonating with me because I have a pickup, right? I'm in the Mountain West, or I'm in the West, and, you know, I love rafting. And I mean, all the stuff you guys, and that's what I didn't know a lot about you, but when I started watching videos and doing a little bit of research, I was like, wow, this is like the perfect fit. And again, I think of some of those other companies out there that, you know, maybe didn't resonate as much with me, right? Because I'm not out there doing saltwater as much, although I would like to eventually do more of it. So I agree. I think that's probably the biggest tip is you like the niches, right? You ever heard the saying, the riches are in the niches?
I have not, but
that's a good.
I'm still looking for the riches, but we're super happy to be in 400 stores, and we're super happy that we're kind of catching on out west.
We even
do a backpack soft cooler too.
Oh yeah, yeah. Tell me about that.
We brought that back for you. Fly fishing guys kept knocking on our door saying, "Please make it again." So
cool. That's right.
We've been dabbling with soft coolers for a long time, and the trick for us was always just getting the quality control right. And every time we think we've found the right design and the right manufacturer and the right everything, it would fail our quality control, and then we would have to wait a whole other year. So we finally really found a neat material. We use this stuff called TPE, and it's stretchy and thick, and it's a lot better for the environment than the old vinyl stuff that's out there. And we're using this like life preserver foam inside that does a great job insulating. So our little soft coolers are actually doing a better job of holding ice than our really small rotable coolers, which is a bit unusual.
Oh, cool. Cool. Yeah. I wanted to, so the soft coolers, and I mean, my struggle, and right now I don't even think I have one currently, but the struggle for me always has been the zipper on them, right? Like it's just, some of these have been so hard to zip. You're just like, man, I don't even want to open that thing. It takes so much work. Is that still a struggle for some of these companies or for you guys creating a nice, easy to use zipper?
I think it's just about getting it right. Like we heard from a lot of brand Y people that their arms were all scratched up from the brutal large zipper they were using. And then the other end of the spectrum, you have a zipper that lasts 2 minutes, breaks.
Oh,
so
yeah.
We tried to find a happy medium. We chose something called a number 10 zipper, and it's not as beefy as some, but it's a little easier to use, and it's robust enough that it's lasting, and it's waterproof and all the good stuff. So we've been happy with that, but it takes a while to kind of settle in and go like, this is the direction we want to go. And yeah, putting, you know, anybody with any form of zipper that goes outside, you know, if you're going to be anywhere near sand or something like that, just use some silicone once in a while. You'll be much happier, whether it's my cooler or somebody else's cooler. It's just take care of it a little bit more than you would a rotomobile cooler, but it'll service you really well.
So, yeah, I was kind of wondering if you had, you know, as we wrap this up here, anything else you want to highlight that we missed or you have coming up in the next 6 months or so? Anything new?
Ooh, new, yes. I don't know if I'm ready to announce. No.
Not quite yet. Yeah. You got some good stuff, though. We could expect, because this podcast will probably go out in probably, you know, a couple months, and, you know, it'll be out for years to come. So anything else do you want to think of that person that's going to be listening now 2 years from now? What would you want to tell them?
Well, we do have a kitchen box we're hoping to have out like August, September range.
Oh, wow.
Maybe a little earlier.
Awesome.
Yeah. When you look at the marketplace, there's a bunch of $200 junk and then there's like weird $3,000 stuff. So we're trying to find, build a rotomolded kitchen box that would be in that $300 or $400 range that would offer some value to folks.
Nice. And that's basically just not a cooler, but actually thing you could put all your, like a box sort of thing.
It is. It'll look like a cooler from the outside, but the lid will be removable. You'll have a great area to store you know, a Coleman stove or partner stove, or and then underneath of that, there'll be lots of storage area for pots and pans.
Oh, nice.
It'll be very configurable.
Amazing.
So you can put in pantry. Yeah, it'll take standard catering pans. There'll be a leg system, and it'll match with our Pro Series coolers and integrate in kind of a modular way.
That's it. That'll be cool to have. Yeah, that's always a struggle. Like right now, I've got my cooking, my river gear all in an action packer, right? It's kind of a mess.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Be nice to be more.
Me too. That's I've done the same thing, and we think we can help people stay a little more organized and give them something they can really, you know, utilize as part of the cooking process.
Awesome. Cool. So also, I just want to note, there are some videos out there. I was watching a few of them that talk about comparing like ice, you know, and I'm not sure who all, I'm sure there's tons of them out there, but if somebody wanted to go deeper into just learning about what you guys do or these coolers in general, is there a resource or would you direct them over somewhere specific?
I would say check out our website, and we've got an Explorer tab there, and that'll help you with things like warranty or take you to our Ice Academy.
Yeah.
The tips there you can use on any cooler. Obviously, you don't have to necessarily use Canyon, but, you know, we want to be a part of the community. And yeah, I think you guys would find that valuable.
Okay. All right, perfect. And a couple of random ones before we get out of here. I noticed you had so football. Are you a big football fan, or is that your sport of choice?
It's a weakness of mine. I have to admit right now, I did grow up back east for some of my childhood, and we grew up being Washington Redskins fans.
Yep.
And that translated when I moved to Arizona. So I'm a big Arizona Cardinals fan. And making fun of the Denver Broncos does come into play on occasion. But
yeah.
But usually you guys can make more fun of me.
That's right.
And
that's right. That's right. Yeah, it's pretty. Yeah. So in football, how's it been this year? I actually haven't been keeping up on things. With the COVID stuff, has it been kind of has it worked out?
Well, I've been keeping track of the free agency right now. It's really interesting. The Cardinals are definitely sort of going for broke, and they're trying to put together a playoff team. We'll see if did they bring in guys that are too old to play,
right,
or did they do it just right?
Yeah.
But, you know, does J.J. Watt have a little gas left in the tank?
Yeah.
We'll see.
Gosh, I know. So. And how does what's his name? Actually, we don't talk much about sports here, but I saw, you know, obviously the Super Bowl this year, what's his name wins another one. I mean, is that guy, I mean, it's kind of crazy that, I mean, is he the greatest or not really?
You know, I used to really enjoy rooting against New England,
yep.
But I have to give props to Brady for going to a new team. I have a soft spot in my heart for a lot of the folks on Tampa Bay because they're old Cardinals coaches.
Oh, wow.
And players. But, so I have to give them props for winning one there,
yeah.
But typically I really can't stand New England.
No, definitely not. Okay. And the other random one, so I'm not sure if you're a big music fan, but do you have a type of music or a band or something you like to listen to on the river?
Oh, gosh. You know, my claim to fame outside of trying to be a coolionaire is I went to high school with David Grohl.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, Mr. Foo Fighter, Mr. Nirvana
exactly.
Himself. So my music tastes tend to run along, you know, very similar to Mr. Grohl's music.
That's cool. That's cool.
For good reason.
Well, so you were actually, were you friends or knew him or talked to him? Or was he kind of like, I'm guessing he was kind of an outsider.
I went to, it was a public school, but almost no one dropped out. It was a very good public school. And he dropped out and, you know,
yeah.
He was in my class. We had a lot of mutual friends, some of which became like his stage managers and
sure.
Stuff. I was never tight with him.
No.
I mean, I'd love to say I was.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. What, you could see yourself. What if you, instead of winning the coolers, you were his stage, you know, or you were in the music business? Could you see yourself doing that?
I'll take it. Yeah.
Well, that's right. Hey, didn't you start a music event?
I do miss some live music.
Yeah, you had a music.
What's that?
You had a music event, right? You started. So you are kind of doing a little bit of it.
Yes. Yeah, it was fun. I don't know if you guys are familiar with like Fat Tire Festival, being that you guys mm-hmm. are a lot of Coloradicals up there. But it was similar to Fat Tire Festival. And it was crazy and fun and lots of costumes and 80s cover bands and hula hoops and, you know, makeup and just a lot of fun.
That's cool. Well, I'll leave that for the next one and put a link out to that. If you guys are you still doing that once COVID, are you planning on getting back to that?
I did sell out of that one about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
I was just too busy with the coolers. It's called Flagstaff Hullabaloo.
Okay.
But it's a neat little event. It gets about 4,500 people, and I'll show up at that once in a while, and it's still a lot of fun.
Perfect. All right, Jason. Well, that's a wrap. I'll send everybody to canyoncoolers.com if they have questions. And, yeah, just want to thank you for coming on and sharing some knowledge on coolers. Definitely I'm looking forward to hopefully connecting more and maybe getting on the river with one of your super coolers there. So, yeah, appreciate the time.
Dave, thank you so much, and thank you for bringing your listeners in, and hopefully I didn't put them all to sleep.
So there you go. If you want to find all the show notes with all links we covered, just go to wetflyswing.com/211. Want to shout out to our members society. If you're a member currently, want to thank you in advance. I appreciate the support. And if you're not, you can head over to wetflyswing.com/members And you can actually join, I think, right now for free. You can hop in the door and interact with the community. We've got a few added features in the paid version. So if you're a current member, find out how you can get on this podcast as a guest. And if you want to do that yourself, you can check in there. So appreciate the support again. And as always, if you want to find out about upcoming trips and meetups we have going, especially as we go out of COVID, the Members Society is the place to go. That's it. That's all I have for you. That's a wrap today. I want to thank you for all your support and the listening of this podcast and listening today all the way till the very end. I appreciate you. I appreciate your support again, and hope to maybe see you online or maybe on an upcoming meetup or trip.
Thanks for listening to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show. For notes and links from this episode, visit wetflyswing.com.